5 minutes into the press, not even 5 minutes, 5 seconds in the presentation, the teacher hadn't even finished introducing me. A student raised his hand and said, "What's your brand?" And so I knew he was going to be one of the students that kind of challenges me.
Cheeky.
And I said, "That's a great question. I'm not going to answer that question because my brand isn't really what I tell you it is. It's what you think it to be. And so let me get through this presentation and I'll ask you what you think my brand is."
What if every young athlete thought of themselves as a brand? Today's guest, Amit Chitray, shows why this is so important. A communications expert who's helped executives and young professionals get noticed, Amit now applies the same lessons to student athletes. His book, The Other Playbook, teaches athletes how to see their value, communicate with impact, and take control of how they're perceived on and off the field. We dive into real-life stories, practical strategies, and simple steps for young athletes to map their skills, solve problems resourcefully, and become their best selves. If you're a parent, coach, or anyone who supports young athletes, this episode is packed with insights to help them thrive in sport, school, and life. I'm Ian Hawkins, and this is Sport is Life. The purpose of sport, as I see it, is to see your vision become a reality. Find your voice, create strong connections, and learn to trust your body. Hi, Amit, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm looking forward to this one. Anything to do with how we can make lives better for young athletes, I'm a big fan of, so I appreciate your team reaching out to come on. It's a perfect fit.
I'm excited to be here.
Good man. Now, you must have had your own sporting background. So what sports did you grow up playing?
I grew up playing a lot of sports, you name it, basketball, soccer, tennis. I had one of those childhoods where you just went outside and there was always a group of kids in the neighborhood to play sports with. So sports and physical activity was always a really important part of my childhood growing up. And, my wife and I, we have three boys and we wanted to make sure that they were all physically active as well. And we've been one of those stereotypical overschedule your kids in sports type families. So all three of our boys have been very, very active in sports.
Love it. They love it though too, right? Like if you wouldn't keep doing it if they were resisting going.
Oh, they absolutely love it. It's a balance too. I mean, they're also very active in school and in community activities, but sports is the big driver. We're a big believer in keeping them in sports because there's so many life lessons that you can learn from sports. It sounds cliche, but it is true. We've seen it from our own kids. They've learned about hard work and teamwork and collaboration, and they've carried that with them. Two of my two older boys are now off in college and they play sports in college, and my youngest is still in high school and very active in school sports. So it's really an important part of our family.
Yeah, I love it. And looking back now, you've obviously done a lot of work on yourself with the work that you now do in a corporate environment, but also with the work you're doing now with the book and young athletes. What are some of those lessons you look back on now with hindsight from those young days playing sport that you realize that you did learn and probably could have only learned in that sporting environment?
I think the biggest lesson for students playing sports is that they have to understand that they're always being watched. They're always being perceived. And I think a lot of students maybe understand that on some level, but don't understand how deep that goes, that they're always being watched, whether it's by their coaches, their teammates, teachers, family. And they have to understand that how they think they're presenting may not actually be how they're being perceived. That was the biggest lesson as I wrote this book. And just a little bit of a backstory, you mentioned kind of my corporate background. My career has nothing to do with sports. My career is in communications. I started off my career as a TV news reporter. And so I was a TV news reporter. I've worked in PR. I've done crisis communications and a lot of corporate communications, which include leadership trainings. And so I had this leadership training around personal brand development that I gave to companies and executives around the country. And, you know, the genesis of this book came from that training, actually. There was one day I was giving the training, and the night before the training, I wanted to practice a little bit more in front of a live audience. So I sat my three boys down, and just so I could have someone to riff off of a little bit. And as I was going through it, I just had this light bulb moment. Why are we waiting until people are career professionals to teach them these skills? My three boys, I looked at their life experiences. These are life lessons that they can learn and benefit from at an early age. And so the premise of the training and the premise of the book is that I encourage people to look at themselves as a product, right? So every product has a brand. And if you think of the major companies, they all spend hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure you feel a certain way when you interact with their product, when you power up your iPhone for the first time, or you walk into a Starbucks. Those companies are intentional that you feel a certain way when you engage with their product. So similarly, we have to understand that we are products and we have customers, and we have to be intentional so that those customers feel a certain way when they engage with us. It's not enough for a kid to say, yeah, I'm coachable. You know, what are you doing so that your coach sees that you're coachable? So getting back to your question, I think that's the biggest lesson that kids don't quite understand is that they're constantly being judged. People are making these assumptions about them. Some people who've never even met them before, and you have to be deliberate in your actions to make sure they perceive you the way you want to be perceived.
Yeah, love that. And does that mirror up with your upbringing as well when you're playing as a youngster that maybe you weren't allowing yourself to be perceived in the way that you actually were?
Yeah, I think it's true for kids in general. And first of all, many adults don't turn the glass around and look at themselves and reflect and become introspective like that, let alone kids. I think it's very difficult for kids because they often don't think of themselves. Thinking of yourself as a product is a really new concept for them. And you know how it is as a kid. I mean, when you were a kid, did you really care what, you know, the adults thought about you? Probably not. You know, do you care what your teachers think about you? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. But when you frame it around, okay, you're a product, these are the customers that are important to you. And maybe think about who are the customers that might be important to you a year from now or 3 years from now. Then all of a sudden you start to look at it through a different lens and say, oh, maybe I should care what they think about me. And maybe I should try to present myself in a different way.
Yeah, I guess for me, the reason I asked about you specifically is like I was a child that grew up constantly caring about what other people thought. Like I was thinking about it all the time, and knowing what I know now, like I was a shy kid, but I was really someone who wanted to be connecting with people. I wanted to be like in conversation. I wanted to be included. All of those different things, and I think about the different moments of coaches that sort of brought that out of me as a younger person. I don't know if that comes into what you're teaching, but that's why I was asking you about your specific journey. Like, do you have much memory of that and what that was like for you?
You know, I think everyone's going to be a little bit different. I think for me, I get what you're saying that, yeah, you care what people think. It's not that you don't care. I think the challenge with a lot of players, and it certainly was for me, is you don't appreciate just how many different people are making judgments about you or looking at you. So yeah, I cared what my teammates thought. I cared what, you know, my coach thought of me in the moment, but I maybe didn't connect the dots to all the different customers in my life, right? You're not thinking in the moment about, okay, how is my behavior going to be perceived by an admissions officer at university or a potential employer or a fan or a referee or all of those things. And so I think the point of this exercise is to get student athletes to understand the full breadth of, you know, who are all of your customers and how do they perceive who you are?
Yeah, love it. And to me, anything that's going to help them be a better version of themselves, like a truer version of themselves, well, then that's going to steer them in the right direction. So, to me, it's like, For someone like myself, having this sort of map for me would have just been so beneficial and would have simplified things so much more because I would have had that structure, would have had that roadmap, whereas I was pretty much flying blind. So, yeah, I can see how that's hugely beneficial. So can you explain a little bit more now, given we've sort of already dived into the playbook, about that concept of customers? Because I know when I first started learning sales about 15 years ago, it's like, you know, every moment is a sale. You're trying to sell yourself, convince people of something, get them to buy into whatever you're saying. Like, for these young people coming through, yes, they're athletes, but as you say, it applies to all areas of their life. Can you help the listeners understand, whether they're athletes themselves or parents, coaches, that concept from that branding perspective?
Absolutely. No, it is a difficult concept for some athletes to get their head around. But if you think about yourself as a product, you know, think about all the people who you want to engage with and may want to engage with you. And don't just limit it to your sport. So I say start with your sport. And of course, you'll have your teammates, your coaches, assistant coaches. There may be referees. There may be athletic directors, all the people that are associated with your sport. And then you have to look in other aspects of your life as well. In your community, you've got your parents, maybe siblings, community members, could be a church group. There's a volunteer group or social group you spend time with, those people you interact with, engage with. And then work, you know, if you work, you've got your boss, coworkers, clients, vendors. If you're in school, you've got teachers. So, you know, in every aspect of your life, you have all of these different customers. And once you think about all of those, you realize, boy, the list is pretty big, and you certainly can't please everybody all the time. And so you want to really start to prioritize, like, which customers are most important to you. And maybe you take a few from each of those categories that we talked about. And that's really the first step, because as you think about building your brand, you want to think about, when I put forward the best version of myself, these are the people that are most important to me. So to identify them first is a really important step, because you don't want to let those people down. They're the people that are making judgments about you. Those are the people you want to show the best version of yourself. So, you know, in the book, it's broken up kind of chapter by chapter, and I talk about the customers. And the book's actually designed as a workbook. So, you know, at the end of each chapter, it asks questions, and you literally go in and write your customers. And then there's another step where you can kind of prioritize them. And then you get into your brand values, which we could talk about later, but it's designed as a workbook, so you can fill it out. And as you get to the end, you'll have that plan that we talked about.
Yeah, I love it. You've mentioned that word judgment a few times now. When you were in those roles in the public view, like you said, newsreader, and a couple other sort of roles in that people face communication, what was that like? Like, were you aware of judgment? Was it more around the people in your sphere who were like helping you, guide you as you were learning your craft? Or, yeah, like, what is this more from you as the parent that you've seen that as an important thing?
It's probably a little bit of both. So I mentioned I started my career as a TV news reporter. So you know, I watch a lot of news, not just to find out what's going on, but I'm always interested in how people present themselves, you know, what they say, what they don't say, how they say it, why they say it. And, you know, we all, it's natural, we make judgments of those people we've never met. And so I've been acutely aware of that throughout my career in media and public relations and crisis communications. And certainly as a parent, right, you know, you want to make sure your kids put their best foot forward, and they're behaving, and they're doing what they're supposed to, and are being good people. But one of the exercises I do when I deliver this corporate training, and I go through a version of this book in the book as well, is I show pictures of different companies first, just to demonstrate brand value. And I ask people, you know, what do you feel when you see this logo? And it could be anything from Amazon to Apple, and, you know, anything in between. It doesn't have to be technology. It could be food. It could be fashion. And people have all kinds of comments based on their experience with that company. Maybe they had a great experience. Maybe they had a bad experience. But they talk about whatever they feel based on what they see. And that's how the brand resonates with them. And then we try the same exercise with people. I say, just as companies have brand value, let's do the same exercise with people. So I show famous pictures of famous people and say, well, what do you feel when you see, you know, whoever it is, Tiger Woods, or it could be someone from sports or music, and you'll get all kinds of varying opinions and people feel very strongly about it. And I'll say, well, hang on a second. How many of you have met Tiger Woods? And no one has. And I said, well, isn't it interesting how you have very strong opinions about someone you've never met? Well, people you've never met will have strong opinions about you as well. And so that then the wheels start turning. People start to realize, oh, you know, I make judgments about people all the time. And so maybe people are making judgments about me. And then once they get to that stage and they start thinking about who their customers are, we start to connect the dots, right? Of, okay, if you know that people are making judgments about you, who are the people that are most important that you want to show the best version of yourself?
I love that. I love how you use that word feel. Like, how do you want the people who come in contact with you to feel? Like, I think, I imagine, again, that's something if you're looking at about being front camera faced, that must come into it, right? You want to create that rapport with the audience. You want them to have a certain experience by them watching what you are doing and what you're presenting.
And it's, I think that's such genuine too. It's you know, one of the conversations I often have with people is, well, isn't it cynical? I mean, they're kids, they're student athletes, they're not products. Don't you want them to be authentic? And I say, well, absolutely, we want them to be authentic. But, you know, I think it's naive to think that they're not being watched and they're not being judged or evaluated in some way. And so when I say feel, like, it absolutely is authentic. How do you want your coach to feel when you walk into the room? How do you want your teammates to feel? You know, there are all kinds of leadership quotes about people won't remember what you say or what you do. I think it's a Maya Angelou quote. People remember how you make them feel. And so you have to ask yourself that question. How do you want people to feel about you?
100%. And if you can lead with that, then that's going to take you a long, long way. And I think that's not, I think, I know that's such a great skill for, well, all people to have, but particularly if we can get them when they're young, when they can really grasp the concept and make it become an habitual thing that they actually becomes part of their makeup. Some, and I'm sure you've found this working in different areas, some people just get this naturally, right? Some people just can do this, and maybe even some people listening are like, oh, that's pretty obvious. But there's a fairly large percentage of the population that just doesn't come naturally, and they need a guidebook, right?
Yeah, there are two sides of it. So you're right. Some people will go through this and say, well, yeah, this is, you know, I already do these things. But when you put it down and see the full scope of it, I think it helps you kind of stay organized and it helps you stay on the right track to say, oh, this is why people see that I'm a great writer, or this is why people say I'm a leader, because I'm doing these things to back it up. And so I need to be doing more of those things. Other people, they either don't get it, or there's a significant disconnect between what they feel their brand is and how it's actually being perceived. And I can give you countless stories of just watching my kids go through youth sports. You know, one of my boys played soccer in college, and he played at a very competitive level growing up. And on one of his teams, they had a player who was a really good scorer. He was a great offensive player. And they were playing a match where they were absolutely demolishing the other team. It just, it wasn't good for anyone. We were up like 7-8-0. And so the coach said, okay, no more shots on goal. We know you can score. We want you to work on other things. Play from behind, you know, let's connect passes, this and that. For some strange reason, this one player who is a really good scorer just didn't happen to get a goal that game. Everyone else did, and he didn't. And after the coach gave that directive, everyone else was playing from the back, he had to get his goal. He still got the ball, went up, dribbled, and shot and scored to put us up 9-0. And after he scored, he just did the fist pump celebration. And everyone on the team looked at him like, what are you doing? And so in his mind, I really believe he felt like he was being a leader, because I score goals. That's what I do. But there was this disconnect between what he felt he was and how he was being perceived, because in that moment, his team certainly didn't feel like he was a leader, and his coach absolutely didn't feel that way. And interestingly enough, a couple of years later, even though he was a good offensive player, he wasn't on the team. And, I'm not in the coach's head of why, but I really strongly feel it wasn't because of talent, right? I mean, the kid could score, but there's so many other reasons. And, that's just one of so many stories of where kids don't realize how they're being perceived. So that's why this is such a great exercise to go through.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this. To me, this what you've created here with this book would go so well with training for the athlete, for the parents, because when you tell stories like that, my brain straight away goes to, well, that's like there's an override switch there that's happened. It's like that's a childhood pattern. Potentially to please a parent, or like it's almost like he's taken out of like the words that have been spoken about what's happening is almost irrelevant because there's another sort of overriding pattern at a subconscious level that's taken over. I don't know what your thoughts on what you're going to create here, but I can see it being such a not just a tool for people to use, but to have all this training and facilitation that could go with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. In that particular story, there was a parent issue where he was always yelling at his kid to score, and it made the other parents a bit uncomfortable as well. So I think you're absolutely right. But I do feel, I've taken this book to high schools and colleges, universities to talk to coaches about, if you want to build culture and want to build leadership in your team, this is a great exercise to do. What I've also found is parents come to me and say, we've really enjoyed going through this book with our kids. We've learned so much about our kids. And, it's interesting. I told you when we started that I walked my kids through a presentation, and that was the idea behind the book. I've also had them read the book and go through the exercises themselves. And it's been very fun and interesting, like to have them pause and think about themselves and, okay, what is it that I want to stand for? These are the things that are important to me. These are the customers that are important to me. These are the behaviors that will resonate. It's been a fun journey for me as a parent to watch my kid go through it and to go through it with my kids.
Love it. Yeah, and I think that's one of the great gifts of working on yourself is how much you can then pass on, as you've just described then, whether it's because you've written your own book or just from passing on those different learnings and giving them a window into what's possible. I think about like, all the things I didn't learn because just wasn't exposed to those sorts of things. Yeah, what a great gift for your boys. So what I know about anyone who is guiding others and helping others and is passionate about it, like I can tell you are, there's usually something from their own backstory where they're helping people with things that they didn't have or something that they'd experienced. Like, have you got a bit of a backstory about how you landed in that space of, being that communications expert, helping people be the best version of you?
Boy, the backstory. Yeah, I think at heart I've always wanted to solve problems. I'm a problem solver. And it's funny because when I went through the exercise myself, I mean, in the book, I share my own personal brand plan because it's tough to do sometimes for yourself unless you see someone else's. So I share my own so people can see. And one of my brand attributes is resourceful problem solver. I like to solve problems. It's always been in my nature. I like to play puzzles and games and do things like that. I think that's what kind of guided my career. I do a lot of crisis communications, which is problem solving. And that naturally evolved into this type of leadership training, helping people, remove those obstacles to find the best version of themselves. And when I've worked with people and taken them through this book, and when I see their light bulb go on and say, yeah, this is it. This is what I need to do. And it's just very gratifying for me. I just see it as kind of like a puzzle piece to unlock.
I love that so much, and I think I could just tell by how like you really lit up when you were talking about that sort of stuff, how important that is. Is that something you've always loved to do, like even from a young child, like just be that sort of problem solver and puzzles and that sort of thing?
Yeah, for as long as I can remember, I've always liked puzzles and problem solving and those types of things. And it's funny because part of creating your own brand action plan is not only identifying those attributes, but then what are the behaviors that drive those brand attributes. And so I mentioned that one of my One of my brand attributes is resourceful problem solver. And so to drive that, there are things I do every day, and my kids think it's silly, but I'll play things like those Scrabble games and, you know, games on my phone. I love playing chess. You know, those types of things every day I'll do just to get my mind in a problem-solving mindset. And then certainly you don't just stop at that. I mean, you build off of that. I do a lot of crisis communications work or strategy work with my clients. It's problem-solving. And so, you know, when you do those things, when you have things you do every day, every week, and every month, and you stick with that over a period of time, you don't have to tell someone, hey, I'm a problem solver. They can see it by your actions and your behaviors. And that's, you know, that's true across all of your brand attributes.
So good. And so that, what was the word you used? Crisis. What did you say? It was like crisis management?
Crisis communications.
Crisis communications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So does that come into the playbook? Like, is there an element of that that you've planted in there as well?
Not directly, but I suppose tangentially. You know, one of the things we talk about in brand development is it can take 20 years to build a brand and 20 seconds to destroy it. I mean, you've probably seen this with countless you know, professional athletes down to collegiate and amateur athletes. And so, you know, we talk about social media, we talk about factors that can impact your brand. Some of them are internal, things you can control. Some of them are external, things that are out of your control. But you need to be aware of what all of these factors are, because you can do all this work to build up this brand, and a silly decision that goes against your values can bring it all down in an instant. And so, you know, we talk about that in the book and how you can guard against that.
Yeah, I love that. And with anything, you can focus solely on all the things that could go wrong, or you can go, well, here's what might go wrong, but here's how we put the things in place. And it sounds like that the playbook does exactly that. Here's if you can. I love that you said values, because I mean, that to me, that would drive so much of any of this. Is that right? Like getting them clear on what their values are and who they are.
Right. And it goes back to your behavior. I mean, your behavior drives your values and your brand. So it's not just what you say you're going to do. It's what you actually do. And I always, you know, I always tell the sandcastle story about brand building. So I say building a brand is like building a sandcastle. You could spend a lot of time and energy and effort to build this beautiful sandcastle on the beach, and then you can stand back and just admire it. But these waves of influence are constantly coming against your sandcastle. And if you do nothing, it will wash it away and erode it. But if you do a little bit, if you fortify a little bit here and fortify a little bit here, you've got those daily, weekly, monthly behaviors, you can protect your brand. And, you know, that's what you really need to do. You have to watch out for those external factors. I mean, I tell, you know, my sons and the student athletes I work with, you know, think about the things you can control and things you can't control. You can't control what, you know, a friend does or says about you, but you can control who your friends are, right? So, you know, be careful about who you spend time with and, you know, the activities that you take part in with those people, because you don't want that to impact your brand negatively.
Yeah, absolutely. So without giving away the whole book, can you talk us through sort of the step-by-step, like what are the things that they need to get in place first when they're building their own personal brand?
Yeah, the first thing the book does is really kind of explain what brand value means. I mean, we in marketing and communications throw around the word pretty regularly, but the book kind of details exactly what it means and what we're talking about. You know, sometimes when I first introduce people to this concept of brand, they think, oh, you mean my social media page and how I'm going to get fans and be a superstar? And it's not exactly like that. I mean, brand value is really, you know, how people perceive you and how you want to be perceived. So we really talk about what brand value is, and we explain how companies and products have brand value. Similarly, people have brand value. And so you want to think about what are the things that you want to stand for. If you can design, you know, Ian, if you can design the best Ian you can think of, what are the characteristics and traits you would want that Ian to have? And so you think about that. You think about the customers you want that Ian to resonate with, right? How would they view this version of Ian. And once you really hone in on those brand attributes, then you think of the behaviors that drive toward those brand attributes. And that is kind of loosely how you create the plan. And if you follow those behaviors over the course of, you know, every day I'm going to do this, every week I'm going to do this, every month I'm going to do this, over a period of time, again, I don't have to tell people, you know, I'm a problem solver or I'm an expert communicator or I'm, you know, and this, they'll see it for my behavior. And I'll give you another great example. I was giving this training to students at a local school, and 5 minutes into the five seconds in the presentation, the teacher hadn't even finished introducing me. A student raised his hand and said, "What's your brand?" And so I knew he was going to be one of the students that kind of challenges me.
Cheeky.
And I said, "That's a great question. I'm not going to answer that question because my brand isn't really what I tell you it is. It's what you think it to be. And so let me get through this presentation and I'll ask you what you think my brand is." And he said, "Okay, fair enough." And then, you know, after the presentation, he kind of said, "Well, I think this, this, and this." And I said, "Okay, well, here's the brand I'm trying to project." And, you know, they didn't exactly line up because it was, he only knew me for 30 minutes by that point, but it wasn't bad. But again, to the point, it's not what you say it is. It's what people perceive it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, what a great message for those youngsters to learn, because as you said, they're bombarded with this concept of social media and followers. And when I'm doing work in schools, I often get that question, "How many followers?" And it's like, well, it's not about how many followers, it's followers.
Right.
It's like about anything. It's the value. And I'm glad that you mentioned that as well, that concept of value. I'd be interested to hear, because that's something, again, if I think about my own sort of, especially those teenage years, like trying to understand my value, even through my early years of corporate, I didn't understand where I added value. So what are some of the steps within there so they can not only think about what they do well, but just help them see just how valuable they are doing those things?
Yeah, it's not an easy exercise to go through. And that's why this book, you know, it works well when they're doing it with teammates, with coaches, or with parents, because there are some tough questions. It's a little difficult to be introspective. When they come up with the brand values, I usually break it down into two categories. One is, you said, what are your strengths? You know, what are you good at? That's usually a good starting point. The second column could be aspirational. It's, I'm not a great writer yet, but I really want to be. I want that to be my brand. I want people to think of me as a great writer. Okay, well, if you're not there yet, that's fine. But if that's important to your brand, let's come up with the behaviors to help drive that. You know, when I gave the corporate training, one of the people said, I want to be seen as kind of a lifelong learner. I like to learn new things. And so it was something as simple as he didn't have time to read a lot on his own because he was busy with work and family. And I said, if you can carve out time to read one book a month, either in your field or not, you know, think of the body of knowledge you'll have in just 1 year. A year's not that long of time, but think of the body of knowledge you're going to accumulate. You don't have to tell people that, you know? And so I think that you're right. It's hard to think of what are those values I stand for, but it is, I really think it's what you're good at, and then it's what you want to be.
Yeah. And what I've learned is that aspirational thing, when you're looking at someone else and what they're good at, it's because it's sort of triggered something within you that you actually are good at, but you just haven't quite seen yet. And I love how you described it's really good to do this with teammates and coaches and parents, because, sometimes we can't see, even about ourselves, what the real strength is, and having people there to validate and to point us in the right direction about what we do well. It's, I like the fact that that's how you're modeling it, that it's definitely a group activity, because I think I could actually imagine, is this how you've done it? Like getting teams together and actually getting them to go through the activities as a group?
Yeah, it's exactly it. You know, it's funny because as I was writing the book, one of my boys said, you know, this is a great idea, Dad, but, you know, kids my age, we don't really read a lot. And I'm like, I get it. You don't want another book to read on top of all your classwork and everything else. But I said, if your coach gave you a book to read, would you read it? And he said, yeah, probably would. And sure enough, you know, he's a first-year student at college this year playing soccer. And before he even set foot on the field, his coach had assigned his entire team a book to read over the summer. And they got on video calls every week and they discussed a chapter each week. And I said, look, you know, culture and leadership is important to your coach. And you're reading the book because he asked you to. So it is a great team activity for coaches to take their teammates through. And it's a great activity for parents to go through with their children as well.
Yeah, I love it. And what a great idea from the coach. Well, I'd be curious, what was the book that he got them to read?
It was Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's a football coach. He was a college and professional football coach here, and it was his leadership book.
Fantastic. That's giving me some ideas.
I also want to loop back to something you said a moment ago where you talked about, we were talking about, you know, how do you define those brand values? And you talked about role modeling, like find someone you admire and maybe model that. I think that's a great idea, especially for teenagers, because it's, again, it's difficult to see it within yourself. But if you see a player or a teammate that you're like, wow, they really get it, or I really like that about them, hone in on that. You know, what is that it that you admire about them? And, you know, you can certainly copy that or emulate that and figure out a way to make that part of your own. And so I encourage my boys to do that all the time. Keep your eyes open. And, you know, if there's something with a teammate or a coach that you really like or admire, first acknowledge it. You can tell them, hey, I really appreciate how you do this. And then think about ways you can own that. At the same time, you know, you should always keep your eyes open. You can learn just as much from bad teammates as you can from good ones. If you have a teammate that's doing something that you think, I'm not sure. You know, it's funny. I chuckle because my kids and I will watch tennis, and they are big Nick Kyrgios fans who I really, you know, he's fun to watch, but I don't appreciate him the way my boys do. And they think he's funny, this and that. And I think, well, okay, I get it. As a fan, you might like him. If I'm a sponsor paying a lot of money and he's acting like that, you know, I'm not sure that I would feel the same way, or, you know. And so I always get them to think about the good and the bad. When you watch someone, what are the good attributes and maybe not so good that you can learn from both?
Really interesting that they're fans. So in Australia, we like our sports people humble and, you know, not too cocky and all of the things that Nick is the opposite of.
Right,
and,
right.
And so he has definitely challenged people, but a lot of young people do like him, and interesting that would be the case in the US, where maybe the culture is a little bit different. But I've heard him interviewed on podcasts and being particularly humble and being quite thoughtful and considerate, all those things that his sort of personal persona is very different. Yes. He's almost like a pin-up boy for your book. It's like,
yes,
maybe he's happy to be perceived that way. But I've always thought, like, I'd love to get a hold of him for 6 months and just find out, like, what makes him tick, and not to solve his problems, but to go, okay, well, why do you present this way? Why are you reacting that way? And are you happy about it? Would you like to do things differently? Fascinating. He's a fascinating case study.
He is absolutely fascinating, because you're right. In his one-on-one interviews, he can be quite insightful, quite thoughtful, and even introspective. But then his behavior on the court is completely different than that. And so, I'm not sure exactly what goes on there. And, you know, one of the things we talk about in the book is, again, you can't just say, I want to be perceived as this. You have to do it, and you have to do it consistently. And that consistency is key to maintaining that brand.
Being someone as a younger man, being guilty of that, like how I carried on the football field, I know sometimes, it's like I talked about before, it's an override button. Like, you can have the best intentions about how you go out there, and this is something that I talk to coaches when they're working with elite athletes, is you can put all these really strict rules in place, but if there's a pattern that's overriding, then you actually need to do some deeper work around it, which is why I'd be fascinated to talk to Nick and just get a, you know, bit like you, problem solving, just finding out a little bit more about what makes him tick and how that is. Because I think also in a team environment, players like that, if you can get them heading in the right direction, they can be that person that actually brings a team together, that gels a team, that because of that sort of emotional side, they can actually they can see things a little bit different. So interesting case.
And I also think if you go through the exercise and take time to understand, maybe you're less likely to act out in that type of setting because, again, you know, you're thinking about this is what I want to stand for, and you're mapping out the steps. And, you know, maybe when you're in the moment, something will kick in and say, wait a second, that's not who I want to be. That's not who I said I was going to be. That's not the best version of myself. And so, again, that's why I think this exercise is so critical, because it can help people bridge that gap between sports and the rest of your life.
Absolutely. And when you have clarity about where you're wanting to head, the solutions tend to turn up as well, right? So that was definitely the case for me. It's like, oh, this is how I want to be. Like when I was doing my, well, not playbook, but mine was more a life playbook. And again, this sort of something that I talk about a lot in here is your own game plan is getting clear. Because when you're clear, it's amazing the answers that will show up for you. And even just with this podcast, like the amount of people that have reached out recently asking if they can come on has been great, because it's like, yeah, like the message is there. These are the sort of people I want to talk to, and they're just showing up. So, yeah, you've solved more
That's
than one
fantastic.
Problem today.
Yeah. Well, what I also love about, I love how you frame it as clarity. It's not only clarity of, okay, here's what I need to do, but it's clarity on what I don't need to do. Because if it's not in the plan, if it's not, then it's holding me back, right? And so the clarity actually works both ways, which I really appreciate, especially for a student athlete. Listen, they've got so many demands on their time, from parents and family and home responsibilities to obviously their team responsibilities to schoolwork. A lot of times they have jobs, they've got, you know, community service. And so that plan, I mean, clarity, you hit the nail on the head. It's okay, here's what I need to focus on. And anything else, it's not helping me build the best version of me.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, a plan. Plans, you can get off track with the plan. Like life and sport throws different scenarios at you that takes you away from the plan. But because you have that plan, you can come back to where you should be headed pretty quickly. So you're right. Having all that in place is serving you at so many different levels. Amit, can we sort of steer away from the book for a bit? Because one of the things with this podcast is to be able to pass on your own life lessons that you've learned, whether it's in sport or life, and how you can then map that across to all areas of your life. So if I come back to that, your career, like, can you think of a one or two lessons that you learned, maybe the hard way, maybe from a setback, where you had to learn a certain problem solving strategy or solution that not only was able to have a positive impact for you, but then you're able to now pay that forward because who better to pass it on to other people than someone who's overcome them themselves?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how profound this is going to sound as a huge life lesson, but to me, I learned this really early on in crisis communications, and it is just to calm your mind and take a breath before you jump in to react. And it's amazing. You know, I work with a lot of companies and helping them navigate through sticky situations. And I always hear the feedback, like, you're so calm, you don't get rattled. And, you know, maybe some of that comes from my background of doing live television news. But I think a lot of it is when you're calm, you just make better decisions. I think it's easier to lead. If you're frantic, people around you will be frantic. And so oftentimes, whether it's in a crisis communication situation or just dealing with the stress of life, I just remind myself, okay, it's never as great as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. Let's just take a beat, take a step back, and then attack the problem, you know, one step at a time. I can even tell you, when it came to writing this book, I had the idea in my head for maybe 7 years, and I started it, stopped. I can never get my head around, how am I going to get this thing done? And this year I finally committed to, I'm not going to write a book. I'm going to write an outline for a book. So I did that. And then once I wrote the outline, I said, okay, I'm not going to write a book. I'm just going to write chapter one of this book. And so I did that. And so I just kind of stayed calm. I slowed my mind and I broke it down into digestible bites. And I find that, you know, that is effective in so many different parts of life. It just take a step and attack it one step at a time. It's not always easy to do. I know it's easier said than done, but it has worked well for me.
Mm. You said, I'm not sure if it's going to be profound, but what you just said then, that's profound, because I know how many people that I speak to, they get so overwhelmed. And yeah, we've all been guilty about that, of thinking, looking at this project and going, it's too big. I often, my wife's in, her background's operations, project management, and so she's really good at taking me through that conversation and helping me chunk it down into smaller pieces when I'm getting, you know, overwhelmed in that big picture thing. So what you just described then, that's actually gold. So if anyone looking at a project and they're getting caught up, the planning, it seems elementary, it seems like it's unnecessary, but it actually it leads everything, because then you can go, okay, well, I just need to do this. It just seems so much more manageable, right?
Right. You know, another story along those same lines, you know, after we had our third child, I decided to go back to school to get a master's degree. And again, it was something I wanted to do for a long time, and it was just so daunting, especially now that we had three boys and my wife had a demanding job, and how am I going to go back to school? I'm crazy to think about this. And so I told myself, all right, I'm not going to go back to school. I'm just going to fill out the application. So I filled out the application, and then I got into the program. Okay, I'm just going to look at the course catalog and figure. And you break it down into one step, and all of a sudden it just becomes so much more manageable. You know, one of the things I mentioned to friends as I finally published the book, I said, sometimes the hardest part about reaching the finish line is crossing the starting line. And I really believe that to be true. And sometimes you just need to start, just take that step. And after you take that step, take one more. And, you know, you build momentum and you can get there.
Yeah, so good. I reckon for those of us like you and I who do a lot of guiding others, we're always trying to learn new things, and we can get so caught up in like how much we've learned and some of those sort of top end things that we've learned, and we lose sight of just how much of those really simple things are just so profound to people on their journey. And even to people, like I've done loads of this self-learning, my own sort of self-learning project, and yet when you describe things like that, it's like, oh yeah, well, no, actually that is the profound stuff. Like, so can I just dig a bit deeper into your stuff?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
Cool. So when, again, I've got a TV background as well, so you kind of get pushed down this road that everything's going to be perfect, everything's going to be polished. But what I'm finding more and more working in this medium is that what people are more and more crying out for is real, is raw, is not perfect, because I think we get a lot of life shone at us that, you know, things are going to be perfect and things are going to be this, but it's exhausting. And I think people are over that. So can we get into a bit more of the trenches with you and maybe some more of those lessons? Because I'm sure with all of the things that you've done, it hasn't just been smooth sailing, right? There would have been those moments where you're like of self-doubt. I was listening to, I was going through one of my old interviews because it's coming out this week, and he was talking about one of the iconic motor racing drivers here in Australia, and he asked him about, oh, do you get nervous? And the driver said, yeah, like if I don't get nervous, like I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to keep doing this. So even the best, you know, have these different things that we all experience. So can you think of like where you sort of got bogged down or you had a setback or something that where you were going through your career where you just went, oh man, like I'm really battling here, and then sort of came out the other side with, because you problem solved or you got guidance or help somewhere along the line?
Yeah, I think throughout my career, there have been some ebbs and flows. I was working at a national nonprofit where I was overseeing the communications function. And, I'm living in Rochester, New York, and I'm flying to Dallas, several times back and forth with my wife having a busy job and raising three kids. And it was difficult because it was a great organization, loved the mission, loved the people. But the commute was just, it was undoable, unsustainable.
Exhausting, yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily fair to the organization. It wasn't fair to my family. And that's when I wanted to branch out and start my own consultancy. And I hadn't for a long time because of that, self-doubt creeps in. There's some imposter syndrome of, well, why would someone pay me to do this? This is kind of common sense of this is how you do this. And, my wife had to point out, her background's in pharmacy. And she said, well, this comes easy to me because I studied pharmacy. But, writing and communicating and messaging succinctly and concisely doesn't come easy to me. It comes easy for you. Mm-hmm. So you feel like, why would someone pay you for it? Like, of course someone would pay you for it. And so it was, I had to get over that. Like, okay, maybe there is something of value here. And then so I launched my consultancy and started slow and built up, clients. And then I realized, there really is value in what we do as communicators and helping people tell their story. And so many people have great stories to tell and just don't necessarily unlock the right channels to tell it. And so, there were those moments of doubt, I think, many times. And you just have to remind yourself that, no, there is value to what I'm doing. I think I can help people. And what helps is seeing the results, right? You get one client and you see how they're able to navigate through a situation or tell their story effectively. And that builds success into another client. And then it really starts to steamroll. Sometimes you need that early validation to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you hit the nail on the head there, or maybe your wife did, it's the things that we just do so easily and effortlessly, we almost don't see the value at times because it just, isn't this just what everyone thinks and everyone does? And so I love how you've described that, because I think if we come back to the playbook and if you're looking at young athletes and they're sort of stuck on that, well, what is my value? It's usually through that lens. It's usually through that thing that they just do effortlessly. And like for me, talking. School says talking is not necessarily a great thing in day to day, even in corporate. Like, your value is how much time you're working, how hard you're working in front of a screen. And it wasn't until I started like learning about profile and personality and all these different things and going, oh, no, actually, there's actually value in me just having conversations. Oh, cool. That actually changes everything. So I love that description. And I love how that's helped you to overcome self-doubt, because as you say, everyone gets those moments of self-doubt. So that is a great example.
Yeah. And it's interesting when I've given this corporate training, really, holding people accountable to ask themselves, okay, what is it that I stand for? What am I good at? I remember I gave this training to a company and the CEO had invited like his top sales people there, and he happened to have an admin there as well. And so we're going through the exercise of, okay, what are your brand values? What are your, and it was interactive. So I called on her and said, well, what did you come up with for your brand values? And she was just not forthcoming at all. She's like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be here. I'm just kind of the admin. And I said, well, what do you mean? I mean, surely you have got some brand values. And she was very flustered. She's like, listen, I was a stay-at-home mom for a long time. I just, I'm just getting back into the workforce. I'm new at this. This is not really for me. And so I dug in and said, well, tell me about that. How long were you a stay-at-home mom? Well, what did you do? How many kids do you have? And, what's your role now? And I said, okay, so here's what I'm hearing from you that you wanted to provide, you were a stay-at-home mom, but you wanted to provide a better life for your kids. So you decided to come back to work, right? Like that takes dedication, takes perseverance, you know, it takes some guts. You have to be organized because you're balancing work now with raising these kids. And I turned to the CEO, I said, so dedication, perseverance, organization, are those brand values that resonate with you as a CEO? Is that something you would want from your employee? And he goes, 100% absolutely. And I turned to her and I said, I think you found your brand values. And I mean, she was getting kind of emotional.
Yeah.
But because again, it is difficult to think about, okay, what is it that I'm good at? What is it that I stand for? But everyone has something like that in them. Everyone has, these are the things that I'm good at. These are the things that are going to resonate with the people that are important to me. And these are the steps I need to do to continue to develop those brand values.
Wow, that is a great story. And yeah, I felt the emotion of that moment, because I think I've coached women's teams, like over 40s women's teams, so they're mums, and just how much pressure they place on themselves, that you know, the expectation, the mum guilt, all of those different things. I could just see the impact that would have had. Like, she would have been, yeah, relief. Yep. Oh wow, yeah, I have got value. Amazing. And again, if we bring it back to the book, like being able to have those conversations with young athletes and helping them to sort of embrace that concept at that age, like what the difference that'll make for their life, that's powerful.
Yeah, and you know, there's another step to this that's, again, beyond the sports, because for the overwhelming majority of these student athletes, they're not going to be professionals, right? I mean, the athletic career is going to end at some point. Yeah. So who is the person you want to be at that point? So the brand values you choose and you want to project aren't just for in the sport. So if you say, I'm coachable, I'm a good teammate, you know, that's great while you're on a team. It's also pretty great when you're not on a team, when you're in a working environment, right? And so that's why I say it helps build the best version of people in sports, in school, and life, because these brand attributes resonate across all of it. It's not just the sport.
Yeah, spot on. And I'm big on that. That's, like, again, one of the premises of the podcast is to help people to see how they can map these skills across. So I love how you've demonstrated that. So good. Can we tap into a bit of the your communications expertise now?
Sure. If you give me 1 second, I noticed my laptop is dying on battery. I think my plug came out, so give me 1 second.
Yeah, you're right. I'll just talk amongst myself.
I apologize about that. I was about to lose battery there. We talk about the imperfection and perfection of TV. Well, we just had a moment there, huh?
Well, but usually you've got someone else looking after those sorts of things for you. That's good. I'm glad I'm not the only one who does that occasionally. Yeah, exactly. So if someone's looking to improve their communication, let's start with something that's again aligned with the book. If you're talking about a coach that's wanting to improve their communication, what's a tool or a tip or a strategy that you can pass on that's going to help them to be a better communicator to their teams?
Boy, so I do a number of different media trainings and communications trainings, and you know, a lot of times when I start them, the client always says, well, you know, just tell me what I need to say. What do I need to say? And I always try to back them up. Like, before you think about what you want to say or how you want to say it, the first question you need to ask yourself is, who are you saying it to? Know your audience is the number one tip or rule of communications. And so for a coach, yeah, you could say it's pretty easy. Okay, my audience is my team. All right, well, let's dig into that a little bit more. Like, how many are first years? How many are second years? How many are seniors? What are their motivations? What are their goals for the season? Like, learn as much about your audience as you can, because that's really going to inform not only what you say, but how you say it. And so that, by far, is the biggest tip of any type of communication, is really know your audience.
Yeah, it's a great tip. So once they have done that research and they've started to know their audience, is there like a checklist or something to how they make sure that they then hit whatever they need to hit for that audience, so that audience feels engaged, so they feel like that they're actually, you know, they're being spoken directly to?
You know, there's no one checklist. Each audience is going to be different, but you have to be thoughtful about how does that audience want to receive the information, right? What's the best way? Is it, in the corporate setting, is it email? Is it face-to-face meeting? You know, for a coach, is it one-on-one meetings with the players? Is it team meetings? Is it practice sessions? How is the information going to be conveyed best? You know, when I talk about communications, it's the rule of the five rights, right? You have to have the right message delivered by the right person at the right time through the right channel to the right audience, right? So you start with the audience. That's the most important, but right person, right message, right time, right channel, right audience. And really for effective communications, you need to hit on all of those, because if you miss on any one, you know, you think about it, it could be lost. So let's give an example of a soccer team needing to be given, told some type of message. If it's the right message, right channel, right time, right audience, but it's not the head coach delivering it, say it's, you know, another player, the team might not listen to them, right? So you can go through that example and remove any of those variables. You really need to have all five of those to have effective communications delivery.
Yeah, great example. And I love that it's got that those 5 points for people to remember as well. Before we finish, is there anything else you want to share from the book or about the book or anything else that you want to share before we wrap it up?
Well, you know, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this. This has really been a passion project of mine, of having three boys go through sports throughout their high school and now college careers and watching their experiences, not only theirs, but their teammates, both good and bad, of, you know, things they do and how they're being watched and judged by different people. I just thought it was really important to take my experiences in business and leadership in corporate America and translate those lessons into this book. And I really tried to keep in mind the audience of high school and college athletes. It's a simple read. I use stories of everyday sports to demonstrate a lesson. Each chapter is a specific lesson where they can do an exercise at the end. And so it's designed as a workbook that you go through. And if you follow through the workbook, by the time you get through, you'll have your own personalized plan that you can follow to build the best version of yourself. And so it's a great activity for a team to do together. If a coach wants to build stronger culture and leadership in his team, they can take their team through this activity. It's a great activity for parents to go through with their kids as well. I found it really eye-opening. It sparked some great discussions about who do you want to be as a person, and to just stop and listen to your kids think about that and talk about that has been really gratifying. And so, again, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. It's just something I feel really passionately about, that if you are deliberate about thinking about what it is you want to stand for and taking steps to drive that, you just open up so many opportunities for yourself in sports and school and in life.
So good. And I appreciate you coming on, sharing so openly, sharing your wisdom and expertise. It's been a great chat. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you, Ian.
Now, quickly, before we finish, where can people find your book? We'll make sure we get the link in the show notes.
Oh, thank you. Theotherplaybook.pro, P-R-O, theotherplaybook.pro.
Yep, and they you can buy it on your site. They probably get it on Amazon as well, I imagine.
Yep, there's a link to Amazon, and it just recently got certified by Amazon as a bestseller. So I'm pretty excited about that, and just want to get the word out to as many people as we can.
Fantastic. Well, again, thanks for coming on, Amit. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
From my conversation with Amit, the big takeaways are clear. Young athletes are more than just their performance. They're a brand. And recognizing their value can completely change how they show up. Understanding how others perceive them, mapping their skills across sport, school, and life, and developing strong communication all help them become resourceful problem solvers and more confident in their decisions. Parents, coaches, and mentors play a key role in guiding athletes to see and own this value, giving them the tools to thrive, not just in sport, but in life. Check out Amit's book. And if you want to put these lessons into action, check out my game plan training to help guide young athletes on their journey. And if you enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe and share it with anyone who works with or supports young athletes. You never know who might need to hear this today. You've taken the time to listen to this whole episode. Now it's time to take action. Commit to one thing you've learned today and make it happen. And to avoid any obstructions, join the Sport is Life movement by clicking on the link in the show notes.